There are many compassionate helpers who are unable to help if the person needing it is not ready. I had got up at about 3:30 a.m., having had a restless night, half expecting to have a lucid dream and wanting to revisit John, my brother-in-law, who had died 3 years before and whom I had met only the previous week while out of the body. In this event he had been distressed and hard to communicate with. I concluded that he was dealing with some unresolved issues in order for him to clear the way for progress. However, his distress was also disturbing. I reported this to Julia, his sister, and I regretted it, having upset her by doing so. This time I wanted to revisit him and see if I could help in some way. This had kept me half awake all night. Finally I got up and began to meditate. I focused on the being state, a state of awareness where attention is focused simply on the present, but my attention wandered, preoccupied with thoughts about what I should do when out of the body. Should I contact John, or should I perhaps call on a guide I had met in a previous experience and ask him how to make the best use of the experience? I then thought contacting John should have to be the priority to make sure he was okay, if only to report back to Julia in order to alleviate any concerns. After about 45 minutes I went back to bed with the intent of having an OB. It wasn't long after falling asleep that I became lucid. I didn't have to do anything in order to establish full wakefulness. To make sure I had absolute clarity, I focused on my hands until I could see every detail. I was right, there was no lucid dream narrative. I was in OB and clearly in consensus environment, but it wasn't what I had expected or had wished for. I was obviously on one of the lowest dimensional subdivisions. The atmosphere was dark, murky even, just like before nightfall, except that the air appeared to be polluted, with a tangible fog around me that felt like cobweb. This was not a place where I wanted to remain. In order to escape without having to return to my physical body, I started chanting the Om mantra. This only had the effect that it lifted me off the ground, but somehow I couldn't summon the energy to lift me into a higher state. No matter how intensely I focused on the mantra, I seemed to be stuck in this plane. Finally, I accepted the inevitable, trusting that if the mantra didn't lift me, consciousness was having deeper reasons for keeping me here. I slowly descended to the ground, taking up the challenge. I felt serenity and stillness inside, despite the shady place, but I was not alone. The place was populated with shadowy people, hiding in dim corners. The atmosphere was distinctly bland, if not unpleasant. Through the dark, gooey mist I saw the outlines of city buildings, huge windowless industrial blocks. The streets were dirty and ramps led up to some elevated pavements. A dead, leafless tree emphasized the desolation. Fortunately, where I was, the area was more illuminated, perhaps for about 10 feet, and then it fell off into darkness. Although my state of mind provided a safe detachment from this world, I had second thoughts. No reason emerged for me for being here, and I reconsidered, calling on a previous guide who had helped me out when I got stuck. I called out, but there was no response. Instead, a man appeared, covered in layers of rags, the top one an old army parka underneath a dirty blanket falling down halfway to cover a pair of old, worn-out jeans. He stopped and addressed me. "Can I help?" For a moment I thought it was my guide and momentarily a weight was lifted from me, but it couldn't have been, he was too poor-looking and too badly dressed. The man laughed at my confusion. "You look lost," he said. "Ideally I would like to get out of this place, but I seem to have got stuck, for some reason which isn't quite clear to me. I can't figure it out. Something seems to be holding me here." He told me that not every part in this region was as gloomy as this and it depended on the people to make the best of it. He told me that not far from here there was a small community of people and I should try to get in contact with them. Maybe they could help me or I could help them. "Come with me," he said, and I followed him as we set off through the dark, dense smog, shadowy entities scuttling past us. Throughout this time I couldn't see his face, which was buried under a large hood with shawls wrapped around his neck, preventing any remnant of the puny light illuminating his face. Finally, in the distance, I saw a glimmer of light, which at first I mistook for a fire incident. The light came from a piece of wasteland between half-derelict blocks of houses. It seemed to be illuminated by a small group of people who were tending a bonfire. As we got closer, I could make out three women and two men, who were laughing and indulging in banter. Immediately I saw that it was this event that had raised the level of the atmosphere around them and added to the light, and indeed kept their bonfire alive. It was only then that I noticed part of the light that illuminated my immediate surroundings was actually cast by me, as if I was some oversized glowworm. Immediately I drew all the attention and was greeted with interest and smiles. I told them that I was a temporary visitor, but was keen to reach some higher level. Unfortunately, I seemed to have lost the knack of overcoming the heavy atmosphere here. I wondered whether they knew of a way out of this world. A woman covered in a discolored rag, which at one stage might have been a summer dress, laughed at me unabashed. "Do you honestly believe we would still be in this godforsaken place if we knew of a way out of here? Look around you. Do you think this is a place anybody in their right mind would choose to live in? Anyway, why are you asking us? We should be asking you." I wondered what she had seen in me. I couldn't see myself. I felt I had no power. The best I could do, I felt, was to terminate my experience by returning to physical consciousness. This environment was bleak to the point of being hostile. Wherever my eyes glanced, I saw a derelict cityscape. Not all of it was in ruins, though. The bits that weren't towered as oppressive, dark and windowless monuments into the night, massive brick buildings, with no other purpose than to intimidate the inhabitants and make them aware of their powerlessness and their smallness. This was a dark city, like some monstrous aberration out of a horror movie. "Why are you even here?" the other woman wanted to know. "Maybe it is you who has come to guide us out of this place. We have been here for ages, not leaving a stone unturned to find an escape, but you are carrying a light which none of us possess and it may help us escape." I told them the only way I knew was to lighten the emotion by focusing on an inner serenity that could lift them up. Momentarily I focused on my heart, which instantly brightened the whole area and gently lifted me off the ground, then stationed me 2 to 3 meters in midair. At once three of the people grabbed my legs and tried to hitch a lift. I struggled to rise into the air, but the burden became too great. I rose to about 10 meters, but then felt the energy drain from me as the three heavy bodies pulled me back down to the ground. I told them they had to let go or summon a more positive attitude, that I didn't have the strength to carry them on my own. Two of them released me, but the woman with dark stringy hair clung onto me for dear life. I shouted to her to focus on her heart to become lighter, but she just stared at me despairingly, obviously not even grasping my meaning. Knowing that without her inner connection to the light she would only be a burden to herself and me, I suggested she should let go. To make my way out I wanted to shake her loose, but I knew that wasn't possible. She clung to me tightly as I clearly signaled my intent to escape. Almost instantly I felt pangs of regret and compassion, and instead of disentangling myself I sank with her back to earth. At ground level I apologized to the group and said I was very sorry that I didn't have enough power to take them with me. I squatted down, joining the group. Everyone was resigned and quiet. All I felt was great pity for the people stranded here. I considered giving a lecture that they needed to start focusing their attention on their hearts in order to leave this region, but I knew this would fall on deaf ears. Being thus immersed in their gloom, I could think of no other way than to enter meditation. I cannot say what effect this may have had on the group, but the immediate area around me began to brighten before I even closed my eyes. There was simply nothing else for me to do here. In the end I concluded that all circumstances are projections and appearances, and I left it at that without any further thought. With my eyes closed I went into deep meditation there and then. Within moments I saw patterns emerging and I knew I had transcended the place, disappearing from their midst. I was now in a room, which was bright and cheerful. The walls were covered in a rich Art Deco pattern and I noticed people passing through the room, their dresses made out of the same pattern. When I looked at their faces, they too were covered in pattern. This made no sense to me. My impression was that the pattern I had observed when entering meditation had become a projected overlay to my outside scenery. I noticed that everything was tinged by my thoughts and visions of the pattern. I knew that pattern frequently appears at certain stages in meditation and I reasoned that what was taking place was that I had simply entered an external manifestation of my inner state. With curiosity I noticed that the patterned people were passing through a door into an outside world. I got up and followed. At once I found myself within a new environment, a new world, much brighter and more elevated than the one I had left. It was daytime. In front of me was a tree with rich green leaves, the type of green one would find in late spring when nature is at its most vigorous. Beyond I saw the scene opening into a large square surrounded by houses of a big city. It became quickly apparent that I was by no means on a very elevated level, though it was far better than the one I had just left. The atmosphere was still of a lower dimensional quality, more earth-like, but at least it was daytime and the people here were acceptably dressed and more human, average to attractive looking. I briefly considered returning to meditation in order to elevate to much higher states, but to my surprise I was greeted by a young vivacious woman with brown hair curling down to her shoulders. She invited me to come with her, using persuasive talk of a nice restaurant where they served interesting Japanese food. "I think you will enjoy it and I can see you could do with a bit of enjoyment." I immediately took the cue and saw it as a significant marker to return to investigative mode. I also figured that the remnants of the previous burden of the people and their condition I had just left behind must have still been showing on my face to evoke pity in the woman. She just laughed and took my hand, then pulled me along through crowded streets. Suddenly something stopped me abruptly in my tracks. Letting go of her hand, I signaled to the girl to go ahead by herself, but after 100 meters she stopped, waving at me to follow her. Instead my attention was drawn to another young woman in a green dress, standing not far away at a street corner. Her head was lowered and she didn't look at me, but I clearly felt her thoughts with a familiar intensity. She was just standing there, waiting. With a startle and a jolt in my heart, I recognized her. It was my mother. I rushed towards her and we hugged. I then took her in my arms. She looked into my eyes and smiled. "How long have you been here?" I wanted to know. "Why didn't you call out to me at once? I didn't want to interfere in what you were doing, as you seemed to have company," my mother said. I told her that this was nonsense, that seeing her was the most important thing to happen to me in a long time and that I was glad to see her. I was holding both her hands and looked at her with amazement. She was half a head smaller than me and, as before, she still looked very young and pretty, barely like the photographs I knew of her as a young woman. How she had changed yet again since the last time I saw her. She wore a light green summer dress, which ever so slightly exposed the light skin at the top of her youthful breasts. It was very strange seeing the person I had always categorized into an older generation and a parental authority as a young girl who could easily be half my age. Yet the quite unmistakable aura and charisma of my mother was clearly still there. I felt an incredible warmth towards her and unspoken love radiated back from her. I told her how she looked different every time I met her and, if I didn't know that it was her, from her looks alone I wouldn't have recognized her. I had met my mother not all that long ago and had grown accustomed to the fact that it was only too easy to change your looks in these post-Earth life dimensions and how difficult it must be to maintain the same appearance in a world which was so much determined by the thoughts and the feelings of the people who lived there. I spent a while talking to her and when asking about the family I received a wealth of images as she spoke. I became aware that life in these regions still carried on and was not without events. Quite the opposite. She told me a lot of things had happened in her life here since she had died 12 years ago, that this life was not without its own challenges and that I shouldn't think for a moment that once we are dead the afterlife would settle into a nondescript experience of peace, placidness and eternal rest. The mental images and visual scenarios she pumped out as we spoke could not have been more graphic, and I gained a deep and thorough understanding that life and events still happen, relationships unfold and situations still develop long after we have died. She flashed a scene over to me of a man who had cheated her out of money when they were both alive and who now kept begging her for forgiveness. Her dislike for this man was intense and she just wanted to be left alone, but there were some other events. Life here in general progresses in new ways which could never develop in the same way on the physical planet. I began to understand by what she was telling me how important it was for many people to die in order to further their developmental progress. This was a powerful bit of information, as we on this side often see death as the end of everything. My mother made it clear to me that death is simply an extended form of gathering valuable information and experience, and should never be seen as an end. There are new kinds of intensities in the afterlife which are largely absent on Earth, with greater diversifications of emotions. Of course, theoretically, I had always known this, but the way she communicated this with all the attached and graphic images she projected to me as she spoke made it almost my own experience. She told me new challenges opened up here which we could never have dreamed of in our Earth bodies, both good and not so good. I had a clear and comprehensive insight and understanding of what she was talking about. Instantly I related this to my brother-in-law, whom I had only just met a week earlier. 3 years after his death, he was still coming to terms with certain deep-rooted issues, which he had never addressed or even been aware of while he was still alive. "Shouldn't you go?" my mother asked, pointing in the direction of the girl in the distance, who was still waiting and just waving at me as I looked in her direction. Before saying goodbye to my mother, I told her how great it was that I could still meet her after all these years and even connect with her on a level we had never been able to do while she was still alive. "I am never that far away," she told me as we parted. Rejoining the girl with the dark curls, she led me straight to an open courtyard with tables and chairs. The tables were tastefully laid out, with luminous paper lanterns on each. The yard was enclosed by whitewashed walls finished off with an elaborate oriental wrought iron balustrade on top. Around the perimeter was a buffet and kitchen staff serving food to the guests. There was a festive atmosphere. "What do you fancy?" she asked. "I don't know, what do you recommend?" "I am having fish fingers." I was astonished that among this rich spread of delicacies she had picked such ordinary food. But when she led me to the table and picked up her fish fingers, I noticed that these were the most astonishing and unexpected variety of fish fingers I had ever come across. Sadly, this is where my excursion abruptly ended as I was woken into physical consciousness by an urgent need to visit the bathroom. An unglamorous end to what had promised to be an interesting time on the astral plane. Prolonged hobies are highly productive in terms of harvesting information. For a start, consciousness has time to settle into its full awareness state, thereby picking up plenty of background information in the process so that each time deeper insights into our afterlife reality are the result. The disguised stranger who led me to the group was obviously a guide who preferred not to be actively involved in my experience. It was vital for me to learn that using intent while residing and operating from within a dark, low-level environment, which overshadowed my inner power, was a futile exercise. Meditation and connecting to the inner core is the only way. People wanting to be helpers need to be aware of this. It applies to all states of life, whether dead or alive. If I want to help a fellow soul, I need to be sure to reside in a higher state of consciousness in order to help. On the same level, I simply waste everyone's time. I also have to be aware that the person I am trying to help is ready to make changes within themselves. I had failed miserably in helping those five people. I didn't even notice whether the light my meditation so obviously generated had a positive or destructive effect. I could have explored this energy more, instead I simply and carelessly took my leave without investigating the deeper aspects of their predicament or exploring other methods of helping. A truly missed opportunity, but I took comfort in the fact that I was here to learn. Perception of pattern clearly indicated that my meditation had connected me almost instantly to higher consciousness, but as soon as I broke it I was stuck in an in-between state on a mediocre astral level without having transcended the ego boundaries. This was disappointing, but also important, as I caught up with my mother and learned new things about her and the afterlife state in general. It was frustrating having the experience cut short because I was sure the young girl I met was a guide, there to show me new aspects of non-physical reality. Rescue missions don't have to end up in failure like this one, as we have seen before. Then I had used completely different routes which were more in line with that of a counselor. 28th of March, 2010. Next headline, Rekindling a Missed Friendship. My wife's mother had died on Friday the previous week. She had suffered a chest infection and was kept in her bed for 2 days running. Although Julius saw her twice on the day she died, she was distraught that she had missed the signals and hadn't stayed until the end. She simply thought all her mother needed was rest and she would feel better the next day. So she left early. We were called by the care home at about 8:15 p.m. being informed that her mother had died at about 7:45. Instantly we went to see her. Her eyes were closed, her mouth open. She was lying on her back. A carer had placed a flower on her chest. Somehow she looked serene, almost beautiful, despite the wear and tear of her 90 years. When my wife kissed her on her forehead, she was still warm, but it was obvious that her body was an empty shell, like a discarded coat. I have seen a few vacated bodies and every time it was proof to me that the person who had occupied it could not have simply vanished and disappeared. Such concentrated and powerful individual energy just does not vanish, there is too much of it for it to simply dissolve into nothing. Julia and I thought the same thing. There was no sadness, no sense of loss, because we both felt there was nothing that could get lost. The 90-year-old body was empty but her mother was still alive, gathering a new mantle of energy in another location. The only thing which saddened Julia was that she wasn't there at the end. Her mother had stopped talking days before and when she tried to communicate for the last time, Julia mistook her hand movement as signaling that she simply wanted a drink of water. She made me promise her that the next time I was out of my body I would seek out her mother to make sure she was all right. A week had passed. I had got into the habit of placing the intent for out-of-body excursions at the weekend so I wouldn't be interrupted by business and phone calls. Saturday would have been a good time, but I had a busy day ahead of me as I accepted a job late Friday to be completed over the weekend. Sunday was the best choice. I got out of bed about 5:30 in the morning. Julia reminded me sleepily that the clocks were going forward and that we ought to get up earlier. I told her that I would try to see if her mum was okay. I went into my meditation room and started focusing awareness on being. My mind was like a placid lake. No thoughts that to disturb my peace. The only thoughts I allowed in were concerning Julia's mother. I thought what it would be like to conjure up a bunch of flowers while in the next dimension and then hand it to her as a beautiful bouquet. In my mind I assembled a colorful assortment and wrapped it up in stylish gift paper. Then I turned to the sutras for deep meditation. After about an hour I noticed that I had dropped off to sleep, and decided to go to bed with a strong resolve to wake up in the next dimension to visit Julia's mother. No more than 10-15 minutes after dropping off to sleep, I woke up in midair, realizing that I had left my body and was drifting higher and higher through the ceiling into a bright morning sky. Instead of cloud I rose through welcoming colored mists. This told me that I was utilizing a much finer energy body. My first thought was to call for Julia's mother, but another more urgent thought occurred to me. I had to meet Julia's brother first. He had died more than 3 years ago of lung cancer, and the last time I saw him out of body he was in great mental distress. I could hardly make out what he was talking about, and when I had to leave him I had the impression that he was embarking on a giant task to sort out a number of personal issues. Meeting him would serve two purposes. Firstly, I wanted to know how he was, and secondly it would be great to have his company while visiting his mother. By now the colored mists had cleared and I found myself drifting through another world of drawings, littered with cartoon figures, like giant murals, all around me. I had entered some giant thought form inadvertently. Not again, I thought. What is this nonsense? Instead of ridding myself of the thought forms, I called John's name. As soon as I called, the cartoon drawing melted away and instead I saw John walking towards me through a stone-lined corridor. He looked serious, with pastel-colored skin, just the way I remembered him from when he was still alive. He smiled when we shook hands and I felt a wave of affection towards him, which immediately brought color back to his face. Where are we? I wanted to know. We are actually in Dorchester, he told me in a matter-of-fact way. Not the physical Dorchester, of course. Let me show you around. We came out of the walled tunnel and entered a wide, open square. I saw the cathedral, also a big open market square, but nothing that looked in any way familiar, as I had never actually been to Dorchester. There were people around, but it was not at all crowded. Why Dorchester? I asked. I like the town, John answered. I like the history of this place and it has a rather unique and pleasant atmosphere which suits my mood. Of course, as you can see, this is on a much higher level. I was aware of a pleasant light and atmosphere in the place, and I took it as a clue to deepen my sense of wakefulness. With that I felt a new sense of wholeness or perhaps security, which was difficult to define but so typical of some of the higher domains of non-physical reality. You realize, of course, I said to my brother-in-law, that I am not dreaming, that I am fully awake and out of my body, talking to you here in full possession of all my faculties. I somehow wanted him to be impressed, because when he was still alive he never took much notice of my out-of-body adventures. I know, he said, I wish I had paid more attention. Did you expect your afterlife to be like this? I wanted to know. Not at all. I imagined it to be like Father Christmas bestowing all his presents on the children who had behaved well. What I found was not at all what I expected. For a start, I didn't imagine that it could be so brutally real. By that, I mean that all the fairy tales and the airy fairy descriptions we read so much about have little to do with reality. Reality was what struck me most. There is no pretending here. The most painful learning experience for me was that what I pretended to be was not really who I am. I was struck by John's honesty. We had never talked like this all the time I had known him. He had always kept up the appearance of an enigma and guarded his private self, buying into the persona of a wise man who knew all the secrets of life, but just would not let on to anyone what they were or the true depth of his pretended wisdom and knowledge, which mostly came from reading. He was also a Cambridge graduate and a teacher. His fondness for Oscar Wilde also bled into his demeanor with a certain sense of humor, and as a result he was more respected by the people he knew, but not many were allowed through the veneer of his persona into his heart. I only ever saw him vulnerable once, when his short marriage disintegrated, but even in the last week before he died in our house, surrounded by his closest family, he managed to maintain his strong enigmatic persona. And on his deathbed he looked stoic, like an Indian chief about to enter the eternal hunting grounds, not a flicker of weakness. I could not help but admire his attitude. His face looked noble, heroic. He would not allow the ravages of his illness or the severe pain tear down his mask. The only sign that he was suffering was that he would reach for the morphine bottle, With an air of distinction, he would unscrew the lid and take a couple of gulps as if he was sampling a new variety of exotic liquor. Then he would close his eyes and, with his chin up, wait for the effect of the morphine to kick in. I had never met anybody in my life who had fought so valiantly and bravely against his impending death.